Well, since Bob was telling old people stories, I'll tell a real one about an elderly gentleman who finally at age 96 was being admitted to a home for the aged, to an old people's home, or what do we call them, care facility, something like that, whatever. They try and soften it up a little bit today. And so they were giving him a psychological profile and had a lot of questions they wanted to ask him. And one of the questions was, did you have a happy childhood? And he said, so far, so good. And I think that's the kind of spirit that I'd like to have when I get down the road at that point. Well, I'm really looking forward to being with you for the three sessions. It's very nice to have part one. And so, good of you to discover that before. Otherwise, I'd have been up here speaking and you'd think I'd lost something, because nothing matches the notes that you've got to have out there. The other warning is that I'm going to move at warp speed through some of that. So if you get frustrated at taking notes, just don't worry about it and just listen. But because some of the things, just due to time constraints, I'm probably will end up skipping. The topic that I want to talk on is chaos. And the latest book that I did, which was now a little while ago, called Making Peace with Reality, Ordering Your Life in a Chaotic World, is something that I think is applicable. If you look at what happened down with Katrina and with Rita and with all of the things that have gone on since I did this book, 9/11, I mean, we live in a world of chaos. Something is always going on to disturb our lives. And what's interesting is most of us, like me, when Mary and I started off as young people and we got married, hardly anything has turned out like we expected. I mean, we expected to go this way, and this way, and then God directed us in some other ways, often through difficulties and often through events that we were very, very little prepared for. Just this morning, one of our closest friends went down in a helicopter, and we'd had him in Bible study in Seattle and interacted with him, and he flew a medevac helicopter, and just before I came over here, I went up into the TV thing from Seattle and saw the whole write-up, and all of a sudden, their lives are absolutely turned upside down with their kids, his wife, his sister, the whole family. Events enter our lives and create chaos. But there's also chaos around us. And you'd think it's unusual. But no, it's not. This is reality. This is what most people are experiencing. And for most of us, even if there isn't chaos around us, we make decisions or we create a lifestyle that is at best chaotic. Too much to do, too many people to see, too many things going on in our lives, and we just end up, as it said, chasing our tail. So I'm going to share with you on some things. I assume that we've got the PowerPoint ready to go. Is it ready to flash up there? Let's see if it works. Okay, give me that first slide. And it's how to survive a life of chaos. So today we're going to talk about chaos and its ramifications. But let's go to a definition now. I want to define what chaos is. Now, by the way, this is a layman's definition. I did a lot of wonderful research. There's a whole mathematical science on chaos and chaos theory. And I did all the research. I'm an engineer, so I did all this. And I wrote it up, and my wife looked at it and said, nobody will read that. And all of it got cut out of the book because she said, that'll put people to sleep. So here is the boiled down essence of what it is. Chaos is a state in which chance is supreme, a state of utter confusion. This implies a wanting an order, sequence, organization, or predictable operation, causing things to be completely confused or disordered. And you said, you've been leaving my house for the last week. Because often we find ourselves just like this. And often there is just a feeling, and I'll take the next slide, a feeling of not being in control. Somehow that'll come up if you'll push it again. There we go. And that's, see, most of us can survive anything if we've got some control. But Katrina rolls in and you know you can't control anything. And you know that all you can do is run. It doesn't matter whether dikes are there, whatever it is. When natural disasters come, we don't have any control over it whatsoever. And a lot of things come up in our lives. We ask, have I achieved anything? Did I do right by my family? Was it all worthwhile? And why don't I feel later on in life, this is a little different set of questions. I'll come to that in a minute. But why don't I feel like this, I've had a sense of peace and accomplishment? And in your notes, and somewhere, would somebody give me a copy of the notes for just a second? Left those down. Thank you. And we'll give this gentleman, we'll give Harold another set. I like these words found on the old clock in the Westchester Cathedral. When as a child I laughed and wept, time crept. When as a youth I waxed more bold, time strolled. When I became a full-grown man, time ran. When older still I daily grew, time flew. Soon I shall find in passing on, time gone. O Christ, wilt thou have saved me then? Amen. Now we can answer that last question. But it just gives you a little reminder. You know, my grandchildren, I'm so bored. And then to get teenagers, no, I don't want to hang around, you know, and it goes on. And then you get older and you just wish there were more time. And I like what Charles Kettering said. He says, my interest is in the future because I'm going to spend the rest of my life there. Now, one of the problems is not so much chaos, but it's our lifestyle. There's more to do than time allows. We got children. They've got soccer. My wife's at a soccer game with my grandchildren this evening. Then you take them for music lessons, and then you do this, and then you do that. And you've got TV, and you've got the internet, and you've got emails that pile up, and you've got cell phones that ring. And thanks for reminding me to turn it off. And you know, you've got all of these things coming in to you. But what's worse is the chaos of the inner life. So I'm a believer. I don't have that. No, I think we do. I think many of us sense this chaos in our lives. And so we live in a chaotic world. And I believe that I just want to mention these questions. Let's put these questions now. And as we go through these times, we'd like to answer them. What do I want in life? What do I want in the process of walking through life? That is, how should I feel as I live? How will my goals affect the people in my life? And will my goals help others or hinder them from reaching their goals? Because I'm a famous one for making goals and then pressing on and leaving my wife in the dust. And then I come to the spirit of questions, just go ahead and put those. I turned them around. You know, have I achieved something? Did I do right by my family? All worthwhile? And why don't I feel a sense of peace and accomplishment? But then that brings us to a core question. How do I order my life in the midst of chaos, both in society and in my personal life? An author by the name of Taylor and Wacker have written a book called The 500-Year Delta. And what they proposed is that since the time of Christ, every 500 years, there's been a major shift in society. And they said they feel that we're coming to the end of that fourth 500 years and beginning another one. And if you just review a little bit of what has happened in the last 500 years, which you didn't live through, obviously, but and some of these just in the last 100 years, let me just list some of them. I'm not going to talk much about all of them, but first of all, there's the invention of the clock, which some of us resent. But the fact is that that's the only way people could navigate the seas. And they had there's a great little book. It's about that thick, called Longitude. And it's for the prize that the royalty in England offered anybody who could offer to manufacture a clock that would keep both London time or Greenwich time and the local time, and therefore they could shoot the longitude of a ship. Otherwise, they just wandered aimlessly. They didn't know. That's why Columbus did not discover America. And he instead came to other parts, and he thought it was America, and then he finally got up this way. So the clock was a key thing. But if you would like to say what is probably the most significant thing that has changed the life of Westerners, particularly Americans, in the last century, it is this next one. And let's go. The clock first, and it's the internal combustion engine. When the internal combustion engine, and I like these things, I'm an engineer, you know, so you got to put up with it, okay? When it was invented, it changed work, and perhaps the automobile then changed the very face of how society functioned. And then the third thing is antibiotics. In 1928, when antibiotics were invented, all of a sudden, all those deaths in World War I, which were largely not just a result of wounds, but their infection that came from the wounds, in World War II, they would save them. And now, in fact, one of the things in Iraq, there are many people being wounded that would have died earlier, but because of not only antibiotics, but just our increased medical technology and the ability to get people out quickly, and that's what my friend was doing this morning, carrying someone from an emergency situation. They just dropped them off at Harborview Hospital in Seattle and were flying back to their base. And so we have antibiotics, then electricity, and then the airplane, and then nuclear energy. And then the space programs and all the technology that comes with it. Fred was showing me all kinds of stuff here on miniaturization of electronics. You ain't seen nothing yet. Really. It is coming, and I'll give you an illustration in just a little bit about some of the things that are coming. And then, of course, you get right down to that which bugs all of us right now, and that is the whole issue of computer information and technology. So all of these things in science and technology have impacted us greatly. And then if you looked at economics and business and politics, and I'm not going to talk much about them, but I'll just list them, the whole cycle of capitalism, communism, and socialism has been the source of the conflicts in the last century. And then world trade and globalization. How many of you have read the book, The Earth is Flat? Any of you read that? It's worth reading. And it talks about the fact that communication technology has broken down all the borders. Everything you see politically today by way of borders is just disappearing. And so world trade and the whole issue of globalization. And then the Great Depression actually changed our country and all your grandparents. They live with a memory of that time because it so affected them. And that's why there's one of the reasons there's such a great just a gap in the way they understand the world and the way many of us do. And then the last one is democratization, which, of course, is we're trying to do all over the world. But I'd like to just read a quote from a book called Vidal Connor, called Leading at the Edge of Chaos. And here's what it says. What formerly excited and inspired us has begun to threaten, terrify, and immobilize. The world is inundated with disruptions, unforeseen dangers, unanticipated opportunities, unmet expectations, and alarming new statistics. Startling twists of fate, sharp, shocking innovations, unheralded improvements, unrealistic requirements, overwhelming demands, contradictory directives, staggering liabilities, astonishing results, sudden strokes of luck, and more. At every turn, there's something that we didn't see coming. Some of life's surprises are good and some are bad, but we seem to be constantly contending with, and get this, more than we bargained for and less than we think we need. And so we live in a world that is changing so rapidly. So much has happened so that I can focus on nothing. We have less than an ideal marriage. We have demanding children. We have financial pressures and job and career disappointments. And everybody has battles with lust, anger, and pride. In my research for this book, I went to a website and to an organization, a publication called The Futurist. And here are some of the things that they predict are going to happen. That tiny electronic microchips implanted in a person's forearm can transmit messages that control the heating and lighting systems of intelligent buildings. And that's there now. You can now walk, they're building houses now that all of that can happen, and I've been one of them. It said the 21st century could see widespread infertility and falling birth rates. The next slide. 90% of the world's 6,000 languages could go extinct by 2100. And I think Wycliffe records that they're dying at the rate of about 100 a month. Languages that will never be heard again. There's a prediction that water scarcity could threaten 1 billion people by 2025. Now, when they wrote this book, they were operating 500 years. So it was 500 weeks, 500 months, and 500 years. You know, they went on that kind of a idea. So they were predicting what would happen in 2007. This is by 2 years from now. They said China will have the largest economy, and it is on the way to becoming that. Secondly, that online learning will have driven one-third of the current four-year colleges and universities out of business. That the pharmaceutical management of aging will have become a global mania. That children will regularly have sex before the age of 10. I don't know that that's there yet, but there are places around the world where that's happening. And just because of health and everything, they are maturing more early. That the competency test will determine the right to vote. Said there will be a holy war between Muslims and Christians. Now remember, this is before any of this stuff that's going on right now, when they were predicting. And that there will be a bio accident that will jeopardize the future of the world. And then they go on to 2039 and say that there will be term limits on life based on each individual's ability to pay for his or her own care. Reproduction will be taxed and each person will be limited to the ownership of one child. Where is that done now? China. It's already being done. And they say that life form hatcheries will be one of the most important emerging industries globally, and the overriding philosophical question will be whether we are still creatures of God's will in producing these new creatures. And also, a nuclear bomb will have been set off by a terrorist organization. Now, they may or may not be right, but already they're pretty accurate on the path that they predicted. It was fun, by the way, to go back and see all the other predictions that were given for years past. Some of the craziest things said by the year 2000, we'd only have to work 16 hours a week. And, you know, and you just have all the leisure time in the world, and you know that isn't true. It was funny to read a lot of them. I'd like to go in just a moment to read something on from Ecclesiastes. But I do want to mention a couple other things that I think are a little bit scary when you think about them. This came out in the Wall Street Journal in its centennial edition on January 1st of 2000, there was a major, I don't know whether, I saved that entire Wall Street Journal because it was so significant. But he said, soon a single cable will carry as much traffic as the entire American internet infrastructure carried in 1 month in 1977. But then, this is kind of the scary thing, and I don't have this up on the slide, but that there was, in computer science, they're inventing a thing called cyber bodies. And in this cyber body, your whole electronic life is stored. And you can walk up to any viewer, say a computer on your desk or at the supermarket, slip in your calling card, give your password, and the cyber body tells the viewer what to do next. Your school, your company, your car and self are all vehicles moving through time. And they will each have a streamlined, stream-shaped cyber body like an aircraft's contrail. And behind them, in our institutional and private lives, will be cyber body centric. I'm not pronouncing it correctly. And when you connect to your stream, you connect to a world in which your habits are well known. And it tells about rental cars, a call up something, turn automatically have a history. I mean, the whole issue, one of the major issues of the future is going to be privacy. It's already coming up right now. And I don't care what party you might vote for, but the issue of privacy is a big deal. Okay. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot more of laying the foundations from this. The main thing I want to point out is that we live in a chaotic world that is changing very fast. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, let's read it from the Living. In my opinion, nothing is worthwhile, everything is futile, for what does a man get for all his hard work? Generations come and go, but it makes no difference. The sun rises and sets and hurries around to rise again. The wind blows north, south and north, here and there, twisting back and forth, getting nowhere. The rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full, and the water returns again to the rivers and flows again to the sea. Everything is unutterably weary and tiresome. No matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. History merely repeats itself. Nothing is truly new. It's all been said or done before. What can you point out that is new? How do you know if it didn't exist long ages ago? We don't remember what happened in those former times, and in the future generations, no one will remember what we've done back here. Kind of depressing, but true. There's a lot of truth in the book of Ecclesiastes. There's a lot of discouraging things, but people are feeling that today. And the suicide rates are going up, and people become depressed and discouraged. Now, when I think about chaos in our own lives, there are two kinds. And the first of those, well, let me back up for just a moment. The cause of complexity, I want to talk about that. And we have a longing for simplicity. What most of us want to do is run off to a cabin in the mountains. And again, there's this feeling of not being in control. There are two kinds of chaos. One is self-induced chaos. Now, self-induced chaos are those decisions which we make that create chaos. It's decisions of our marriages. Financial decisions. I am running into fewer and fewer people who are one marriage people. You know, I met a guy in Japan in his third marriage. The last 2 days I've been with somebody who have now become committed believers, but between them they have five marriages. I took them with me to China and had them shared with some of our friends there, and I saw, you know, people's jaws started dropping as they recounted their story. Now, people, don't turn those people away, because that's 50% of the population. And we need to minister to them. And whether it be ego or personality or decisions they made, unhealthy lifestyles of alcohol or drugs or food or pornography, there is a self-induced chaos. Then there's another thing called other-induced chaos. Children divorce, and we can't help it. Children come home broken. Parents have ill health, and you have to take care of them, and they're dying. We lose our jobs. We have pressures at work. Our health begins to fail, or there's just accidents. You know, you have an auto accident, whatever that may be. All of those things are things over which we have no control. But then we come to something that I call internal chaos. Now, in your outline, it just got some points, and I didn't put them up on the overhead. But internal chaos has to do with pride, drivenness, the refusal to allow God to be part of our lives, or the fear of failure, or the fear of the future, or anxiety, or resentment, or jealousy of others' success. And out of this, we have what I call a longing for simplicity. But I believe that a simple life will not be at all easy. Richard Swenson has written a book, which I highly recommend to you, called Margins. How many have read it? How many have seen Margins? Worth doing. I wish I could practice it. When I listen to Dick Swenson talk, he is going 100 miles an hour. I mean, if you've ever heard him talk, you know, it's like a this won't communicate. But for those of you who remember, it's a 33 record on 78 RPM. Now, forget that. None of you know what that is. Half of you don't even know what that is. That's a problem with illustrations. They don't work anymore. It says, run the tape backward. Who knows how to run a tape backward anymore? Now, what we have is a problem of extremes. We want to run to simplicity and hide, but you've got to live in the world that's there. 2 Corinthians 4:16 in the Living says, that is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, our inner strength in the Lord is growing every day. And then the slide up. A problem of extremes, if you'll just go ahead and put that slide up. So, withdrawal from the world or total immersion. Now, if you want the outline of the thinking that goes behind all this, when you do not have a spiritual dimension, you take your humanity and add chaos, and you come up with despair and discouragement. But if there is a spiritual dimension to your life, then God is going to be able to get you through chaos. See, we get very frustrated with all this electronic stuff. I don't, because I like it. But most people of my age don't. But yet all of you who are 20 and 22 and 18 or whatever, it's just natural. You just kind of do it. I mean, it's the way everything is. You text message everybody, you do this, and you poke buttons here, and you... No big deal. You adjust. And just, but when you get older, your kids will have a whole other set of things that confuse you and where you're incapable of doing it. Now, what I'd like to do in the last few minutes of tonight, and part of this is foundational for the two sessions that I'm going to be giving tomorrow where I'll talk about meaning and purpose. So don't, I'm not doing big Bible exposition tonight. But I'd like to talk to you about what I call myths, pipe dreams, and fairy tales. And what this is a set of myths, pipe dreams, and fairy tales that we think will work in life, but really don't. And we live in this dream world that I can get the magic answer to how to life. And many of us, when I share those with you, you'll say, yeah, I almost believe that. And people have taught me that before. I love the story of a 6-year-old boy who wrote a letter to God. And he addressed it to God and came to the post office and they didn't know what to do with it. And they know what to do with letters addressed to Santa Claus. They got a place they sent them, but they didn't know what to do with God. So they opened it up, and it said this: "Dear God, me and my four-year-old sister need help. Our father died last year, and Mom is really working hard to support us. Would you please send us $500? And the people said, "Gee whiz, what'll we do?" "Well, let's take up a little collection." And they took up a collection and got together $300, pretty good. Put it in an envelope, sent it back to the kid. And about a week later, they got another letter addressed to God. And the little boy thanked God for the $300, but he said, "Next time, would you please bring it directly to our house? When you send it through the post office, they deduct $200. Now, I like the story, but the story is that we don't always get what we ask. See, Doug, thanks for the testimony. I mean, you tried all kinds of stuff that none of it satisfied, and it was dangerous. I mean, you're lucky to be sitting here today, not just the alcohol, but all the other things, and you know firsthand chaos, don't you? It's a chaos that you could not control in any way. So let's, just for the sake of time, I had some other things I was going to share, but let's go to the whole issue of myths, pipe dreams, and fairy tales, which I call no magic formula. There is no magic formula for life. Okay, the first myth is this: that God must prosper us materially. Not true. And I get overseas and I see, and I have to be careful how I say this, I don't want to be critical, but I see a lot of TV preachers who preach what I call the prosperity gospel. And it just isn't true. I see too many poor people. I see godly people who serve God far better than I do and have nothing. And what's more, they're never going to have anything. So God is not under one smitten of obligation to prosper you materially. He may. Most of us sitting here are rich compared to the world. So that's the first myth. The second myth is that there are guaranteed steps to escape the effects of chaos. And that, too, isn't true. What most people think is I can buy my way out. John D. Rockefeller said this: "I have made many Williams, but they have brought me no happiness. I would barter all of them for the days I sat on an office stool in Cleveland and counted myself rich on $3 a week." At that point, he was broken in health and employed armed guards to keep people away from him. One of the richest men of the early last century was John Jacob Astor. And at the time, he left $5 million, which would be like worth billions. And he had melancholy and depression. And he said, "I am the most miserable man on earth." And all of us want that magic bullet. If I do 1, 2, 3, then it'll all work, either spiritually, material, and that's what the self-help books do. Get this, buy this. If you'll do my steps, I'll make you rich. And you see them all the time. And it just doesn't work that way. The third thing is, it'll get better with time, so just wait. It may get worse with time. Most of our lives don't get better with time. What happens is we learn how to walk with God better with time, and therefore we know how to adjust to the future. The fourth one is, if I live a more spiritual life, I will not be impacted by the chaos around me. You tell that to the people who were in the hurricane and the tsunami. I mean, you know, I love the verse that says, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. A few of you know that my son was murdered 15 years ago by a pretty evil man who was just out to kill somebody. And as I wrestled with that, I had to wrestle with the problem of evil, that we are encompassed in a world of evil And Christians don't escape. Christians do not live in this little bubble where you don't get cancer and where you don't go bankrupt and where you don't... Do you see what I mean? And if we did, you'd think everybody would become believers. But one reason God allows us to live in the midst of an evil world with those difficulties is the non-believers watch us. And they say, oh, I see the resource he has. I play this silly game of handball. And there's a pretty rough crowd of interesting guys that I play handball with. But they, when that happened to my son, they, all of non-believers, they watched me like a hawk. And it changed my entire relationship with them as they tried to see if I get mad, if I get angry, what would I do? And I mean, everybody was paying attention during that time. And I believe that's why we go through some of those times. Okay, let's talk about the pipe dreams. Let's go to the next one here. Let me catch up with my notes here for just a moment. The pipe dream is that there's an idyllic, perfect future and I can create it. I'm going to save my retirement, I'm going to build the cabin on the lake, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to get all set. Or I'm going to get spiritual, I'm going to go to all these conferences. You can't create it. There is no such thing as an idyllic life. The second pipe dream is there's one perfect way to live. And that, it says to life, it should be to live. In other words, even in our churches, even me, I come say, okay, now I want you to live this way. And if you live this way, memorize scripture, have a quiet time, you know, all the navigator stuff, then it'll be okay. And it won't necessarily be okay. There is not just one perfect way. That God puts us down many paths. The third thing is the latter part of my life will be easier and simpler. Anybody over 60 here? That true? Hi, Jim. No, it ain't true. And the last one is there'll be increasing ease as technology lifts my load. Again, not true. Just confuses us, doesn't it? Hi, Jim. It just doesn't work. And let me go to the fairy tales. We'll live happily ever after. No. Just need to read Job. You read the latter end. If you read on every character in the Bible just about the latter part of their life, you will not have a fun reading. In fact, I was just in Asia, and I spoke to our senior leaders on how to finish well. And I said, and you know, some of our dear, dear friends, many of our navigators, Leroy Imes and Lauren Sanny and Doug Sparks, Bob Seifert down in Dallas, they just have died within the last 2 years. And they died well. But what I pointed out, it wasn't the last days of their life that counted. It was the last 20 years after they were out of their jobs. And when they were in between those 2 points as to how they lived that really demonstrated their finishing well. And I was with, except for Bob, I wasn't with Bob Seifert very much, but with all the others, I was generally with them when they died or within a few days, but I related to them as they went through those 20 years. When all of them used to be my mentors and my seniors. And then I go to relate to them and help them walk through that. And someone will do the same with me, by the way, and I've just entered that period myself. And then the other fairy tale is that, what would I come to here? Live happily ever. Oh, I missed one, I guess. All technological and material advances are bad. Or all technological or material advances are good. Both are fairy tales. And final two is one marriage, one career, one family are the norm for an idyllic life. Now, I wish that were true. Mary and I have been married 47 years. I gave her gift was 47 days that we will be off somewhere next year. Jim, hold me to it. Where are you, Jim? You know, check up on me, will you? Because I promised it to Mary. That's hard for me to do. You know that. But men and women, it just isn't happening. In every church that you're going to go, that hasn't happened. Now, you can ignore those people who have had lives disrupted like that. It doesn't change the reality. And the final thing is that the good guys always win, and they don't. Good people will not always win. The one thing that will win is our walk with God. If we can continue to walk with God for a lifetime, I can guarantee you that you will win. Okay, so here's the foundation for what we want to talk about. And tomorrow, and I realize about 100 other people coming tomorrow, I don't know how, someone summarize this for them, will you? Here is this whole chaotic situation. I painted a picture of the way the world is changing. And then brought up these false things that most of us have bought into one of those at one time or another. And I leave you discouraged tonight, okay, with Ecclesiastes 1, that none of that's going to be true. Now, what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to continue to develop this idea, but we're going to go to some solutions. And they're not going to be 1, 2, 3 solutions, but hopefully there'll be principles that will help you. And I want to guarantee you that Psalm 90, verse 12, is a good verse. So teach us to number our days that we may apply a heart of wisdom. And by numbering our days is to understand that we have limitations and that we count them. Gene War used to say that he had that countdown to age 70. You remember his saying that? And then everything beyond is a bonus. Well, that was one way of numbering your days. I have friends who have that all those days counted out, and they, you know, do it. Now, God may give you many more. But I think what it means to number our days is to count them as precious before God, and that God has a purpose every single day of your life. And my friend Steve Smith, who went down in the helicopter last night, age 59, his days were over. He didn't know it when he took off. But he's in the presence of Jesus now. And I could tell you of many others. So I want to encourage you to go home tonight, just read Psalm 90, verse 12, reread Ecclesiastes 1, and then let's come back tomorrow and talk about how to walk through this chaos in a way that brings honor and glory to God. Shall I pray, or is somebody else going to close this thing out? Okay, why don't you do it, and then why don't you pray, okay?